Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into Preds Insiders on this Monday evening. ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. I'm Ryan Porth here with you alongside Chase McCabe of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Weekdays 10 to 2 on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase, sir, how we doing this evening?
Doing great, Ryan. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you as always for coming on. Are you having hockey withdrawals? It's December 14th. Oh. Usually, we're about 2+ months into an NHL regular season. We're still trying to figure out when the next regular season is going to start. So, are you having hockey withdrawals?
Big time. And let me tell you, as much fun as I had 2 weeks ago being a part of the game at Fordyce Bellevue between NBA and Father Ryan, that was so much fun. We had the full broadcast crew with the TV side doing a stream and then the radio side with Pete and Hal. That made it worse. I mean, I walked away. It was like I need more. I had withdrawals because it was so much fun to just be at the rink again and see live hockey. And you know, I always say high school sports, that's the purest form of sports, and you really saw that night. So yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready for the NHL and the players to come up with an agreement. I know about a month from today is what they're targeting, and I hope it happens.
Yeah, the date that they have in mind now is January 13th, and mind you, this is always a moving target, always subject to change, as Pierre LeBrun and Darren Dreger like to remind everybody. The latest from Pierre LeBrun tweeted out earlier today. Pierre LeBrun said, "The NHL and NHLPA went nonstop all weekend and continue Monday, going back and forth on season protocols, transition rules, critical dates. The hope is to have it wrapped up over the next few days to set up a vote on each side by the end of the week. But as we saw in June, these things can drag." So that was Pierre LeBrun earlier today. And look, if last summer taught us anything, is that whenever we're hoping something comes to a conclusion with a process like this through COVID, it's typically not going to finish when we want it to finish.
Right, exactly. It's going to drag out. It's going to take a while. But if they get it right, you know, my whole thing is, especially in 2020 with all of these sports and the negotiations they've gone through, if they come to a conclusion that turns out to be best for everybody and they're able to play, then okay, then you take it. You take as long as you need. Now, baseball fumbled and bumbled, and I don't think they got it 100% right. Hockey, we saw the return to play. I liked it. It worked. Now let's make this work for everybody, and hopefully before the season is over, you know, the owners are able to have some fans in the arenas who are able to see hockey live and in person again. But I hope we're close.
Now, the update that I mentioned just a minute ago was from Pierre LeBrun. Larry Brooks from the New York Post, who's usually very well connected within the National Hockey League, he put out around the same time as LeBrun, saying that as the league and the PA continue to work on those protocols and regulations for the upcoming season, players are being told to expect training camp to begin shortly after New Year's, and teams have been told to expect season openers between January 13th and 16th. So for now, status quo. Again, yeah. I think an important word in that tweet that was used twice was expect.
Right.
Players are being told to expect training camp to start after New Year's. Teams being told to expect openers between January 13th and 16th, subject to change.
Expect is something that we have heard a lot in 2020. Well, we expect this to happen, and then it doesn't happen. I mean, you expect every game to be played in a normal year, and we know that hasn't happened. So
the NHL expected to have an 82-game season.
Yes.
Back in August or September, before we knew that this season was going to be put off until January from their December 1st target date, the initial target date.
So basically what I'm understanding is they're going to have probably 10 days of training camp, and then they're going to play real games.
There will be a lot of lower body injuries in January.
Oh, groins and hamstrings and sloppy hockey. But you know what? It's hockey. Mm-hmm. You're going to have it. And that's what these teams are going to be prepared for. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see kind of what the taxi squads look like. You know, we've seen these announcements that the Predators have loaned some players to ECHL teams. They're obviously going to have players to fill in if there are positive tests. But like you said, I mean, the injuries, you know, what, because these guys are practicing. We've seen that the guys are on the ice at Bridgestone Arena, but still very different. They're not going to have the preseason games to warm up with, and you're going to have some of that. So they know what they're getting into. The league is prepared for that. But I just know that I'm ready to – I'm so over the, well, we expect this to happen, and we're going to just – you know, maybe this happens, or what about this? I'm ready for Gary Bettman to make an announcement and me to circle January 13th on my calendar saying – time to go back to work in some capacity with the NHL.
Well, we all got really excited last week when the news came out that the NHL and the NHLPA were putting some of the financials in the rear view.
And that's the hardest part.
Yes. And there was some grappling over money between the PA and the NHL. The NHL went back to the PA trying to amend the CBA agreement that they came to back in, what was it, July, I believe it was, July or August.
Right.
When they knew that the pandemic would still be going on and affect this upcoming season somehow. And the NHL went back to the PA trying to defer even more salary and increase the escrow even more. So a lot of people got excited last week when Darren Dreger reported that portion of this was over with, and that the league and the PA would just focus on the protocols and the format of the 2021 season. Here was Darren Dreger on Robbie and Rex Road last week talking about the NHL and the NHLPA moving forward.
What's the latest on what you've gathered from negotiations between the NHL and the NHLPA in regards to when we could see some hockey coming back?
Well, we have an official target date, and that official target date is January 13th. For the start of the 2021 season, but there is a lot of logistical work and discussions that are still required between the National Hockey League and the National Hockey League Players Association. What we reported last night, brings it to the minute. And I think wisely, the Players Association and the NHL have decided to push away the financial framework as a standalone and focus purely on all of the decisions that have to be made, the mechanics that have to be put in place to get the 2021 season underway. That's not to say that the financial issues that plague Nashville and every team in the National Hockey League because of COVID-19 are simply going to evaporate and disappear. But there was no way for those two sides to come together and change, amend an agreement that they negotiated 5 months ago in July. So just to get the game back on the ice, the NHLPA and the National Hockey League essentially said, all right, well, let's make our focus singular here, and let's deal with all of the logistical issues that we have to make January 13th a reality.
That was Darren Dreger of TSN on Robbie and Rex Show last week. And Chase, when we heard that, and that was probably about 12 hours or even less than that, after he tweeted that news, there was a lot of excitement thinking that we were about to get a lot of news. And here we are almost a week later, still waiting on that. So we're still waiting to see what the NHL format is going to be. Now, I think one of the water cooler discussions over the format is division realignment. And Pierre LeBrun put it out last week. This would have been last Wednesday, saying that the four division realignment currently looks like this, according to sources. And the central division would be as follows: Carolina, Columbus, Detroit, Chicago, Florida, Minnesota, Nashville, Tampa Bay. Now, that's different from what Greg Wyshynski has been putting out from ESPN in the last 3 or 4 weeks or so, where I believe both St. Louis and Pittsburgh were in the Central Division and not Minnesota and Carolina. Either way, it's a pretty tough division, but if it's Minnesota and Carolina alongside Nashville in the Central Division, I like that better than Pittsburgh and St. Louis.
Yeah, because you're already adding Tampa Bay, the defending Stanley Cup champions, so you would add them in there. Florida, I think, is a team that's getting better, but we'll see. It's still Florida. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, having Carolina and Minnesota as a part of it. But either way, you knew, like, even if you're playing in the normal Central Division, you knew this was going to be a test for the Predators. It's a different team. It's the most changes that this team has had in a long time when it comes to the roster. Plus, you got John Hines that's coming in for his first full season as the head coach. You're going to have different assistant coaches. So this is the first time in a while that things have really felt different. So you knew it was going to be a challenge. But now it just gets even tougher. But that, you know, other teams are going to have to face that too. What I will say though, Ryan, that clip from Darren Dreger, I applaud the NHL and the NHL Players Association for, even though you know they're not agreeing on everything, and money is a big part of that, and they all want to make money, but they realize that the greater good is that they need to play. And for them to all get their money at some point in time, they need to play. Because if they don't, it's just going to hurt them, and they've been down that road before. You know, one of the reasons that the NHL is in a position, or was in a position, to come back into the bubble with no fans and to start this season with no fans and lose some of that money is because the league has been so healthy since the last lockout. And you got a new TV deal on the rise. They know the importance of playing. So I will give them props for trying to work this out the best they can, because in the past there have been times where they haven't. So I think that that's a positive here.
Sure, sure. And as Pierre LeBrun said also with these divisions, they are subject to change, as is everything in 2020. I think
we expect them to change, right?
Yes, yes. We expect there to be an asterisk on 2020, because under that asterisk, it will say subject to change.
Yep.
As is life in 2020. You have to be flexible. Things can change on a dime. I will be interested, once the schedule comes out, I'll be very interested to see how they do it. Do they put it out in halves like the NBA is going to do? The NBA has already put out their first half of the schedule, which starts a week from tomorrow, believe it or not. So the NBA is going to get started December 22nd, and they're going to put out the second half schedule at a later date. I wonder if the NHL is going to put out, say, the first 20 or 30 games and then wait to see how everything goes, both in the United States and in Canada, because the Canadian border is a big reason for this format to be dragging out, or the release of this format dragging out the way it is, because of the division alignment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's forced there to be some teams and divisions that shouldn't be in, say, the Pacific Division.
Yeah, and I would do that, because I know the NBA's done it, as you mentioned, but NASCAR did that when they came back. They did their schedule and in segments, because it's better to do it that way, and then you don't have to be the Big Ten and go back and go, hey, we changed our mind, or we had to change something. It gives you some wiggle room and doesn't put as much pressure on things. Let's just take it a little bit at a time, you know, before you get through the full schedule. So that's what I would do. I don't know if that's exactly what they're going to do, but that's how I would go about it.
Absolutely. This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth alongside Chase McCabe of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You know, one thing that I would do, I think we both agree that the NHL should just schedule it in halves, first half of the season, second half. I think it would be worthy. Let's just take Pierre LeBrun's divisions as final. They aren't. They're still subject to change, but let's just go on the premise that they are.
For the sake of conversation.
Correct. Yep. So what if the Preds would have seven opponents in that division? It's an 8-team division. You'd have Carolina, Columbus, Detroit, Chicago, Florida, Minnesota, Tampa Bay. What if you schedule like the first, say, 21 games of the season, and they're all done in 3-game series? or three-game homestands, kind of like baseball. And the first weekend of the year, the Preds play at home against Carolina, three games in four nights. And then the middle of the next week, they go to Minnesota, three games in four nights. Then they come back home and play Detroit at home, three games in four nights. And you basically play your division. All the teams in the National Hockey League do this for the first portion of their schedule of a 56-game schedule, we're expecting. And then sometime during those first 21 games, the NHL comes out with the second half of the schedule. What do you think?
I'd be fine with that. I love the series idea. You know, that's one thing that I've often thought about with basketball and with hockey, that their postseasons are all series that you play, but you don't really have series in the year. And I like that. I'm a baseball guy, so I like a three-game, four-game series, what have you. I don't see why they couldn't do that. Play three games in four nights, you're knocking things out, and then that leaves it open to, after you play through that first half of the schedule, you know, we could be in a completely different place with this pandemic, and it might go, hey, you know, the border's open, or maybe traveling to the West Coast for, you know, a handful of games isn't out of the question, and you could mix some things up. It gives you more wiggle room to do it that way. And I feel bad for the schedule makers, because I know that they've probably done this 100 times already with different scenarios, but, you know, they've had some time to work on it too. So I like that plan. I like a three-game series. It adds a different strategy that hasn't been there. You know, how do you manage the goaltenders? Do you work in a third goalie if you're a head coach during some of these? I think it'd be fun to watch.
Well, I know Jonathan Toews came out in The Athletic like a year ago and brought up this thought to Mark Lazarus, who covers the Chicago Blackhawks. And the whole premise of doing a schedule like this, even in normal times, is to cut down on travel, which would help these players' bodies throughout the rigors of an 82-game season, and create more rivalries. And if you were to do something like this with two or three-game series throughout a season, then I think that would actually be – it's a cool thought. I would want to see it. I would want to see it in this shortened season to see what it looks like, but I'm not opposed to that. You know, you knock out your two games in Vancouver on one swoop.
Sure.
You know, then Calgary comes to you for a two-game series.
I'm not opposed to it either. And one thing that we've discussed, I know we've done it on this show, and we've done it on Darren Donick and Chase and other shows, is 2020 has forced us to do things differently. And I know for a fact there are going to be some things that the NHL or MLB or NBA or NFL, you know, they take out of this and they go, huh, that's not a bad idea. We should work that in somehow. I mean, the new ideas that people are being forced to come up with, they're going to be implemented moving forward. And I think it's good to keep things fresh.
Absolutely. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Preds Insiders Ryan Porth alongside Chase McCabe. I almost called you Jonathan Toews. So I'm glad I didn't.
Please don't do that.
I'm glad I didn't.
Please don't call me Toews or Kane.
I won't do that. I'll call you McCabe.
Even though I like 88, I don't like, you know,
that 88. Yeah. So before we move on to the next discussion, which we're going to discuss whether or not we feel like Philip Forsberg is eventually bound for a 40-goal season, or if he is what he is, we'll get to that coming up in the next segment. But I do want to promote something that you are going to be a part of tomorrow, Chase, and that is something that the entire station is going to be a part of, and that's Hockey Fights Cancer Day with the Nashville Predators. We're going to be promoting this all day long tomorrow from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., Hockey Fights Cancer Day with Robbie and Ruxrud from 6 to 10, Darren Donick and Chase from 10 to 2, Jared and the GM, 2 to 6 p.m., and it's going to be highlighted by the noon hour, which you'll be able to stream live on the Facebook page of the Nashville Predators, where you, Chase, alongside Darren McFarland and Willie Donick, will be joined by Preds GM David Poile and the head coach John Hines to start the 12 o'clock hour. So it should be pretty cool. All of this is an effort to support the Nashville Predators Foundation and the 365 Fund through the Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt. So trying to raise money, the Preds have their goal in the month of December to raise $36,500 all to the 365 Pediatric Cancer Fund. So
wonder where they got that number.
I wonder. Yeah. That's a good thought there, Chase.
I'm looking forward to it, though. You know, not only to get to talk to David Poile and John Hines, which we haven't gotten to do in a while, to catch up with them, see where they're at as they get ready for this season, whenever it starts. But whenever we can do things that are for a good cause and help people, and the Predators are so helpful with their work with the Predators Foundation and the 365 Fund that Shea Weber and Pecorine put together, it warms the heart. I mean, and it makes you feel good. And this time of year, after this year of 2020, it just helps to do things like that. So I hope that we're able to raise a ton of money tomorrow and also talk some hockey with David Poile and John Hines.
Amen. That's what local radio is all about, huh? So
darn tootin'.
All right, coming up next, is Philip Forsberg an eventual 40-goal scorer, or is he what he is? We'll get to that coming up next. He's Chase McCabe. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth in studio this evening on this Monday evening. Still waiting on the NHL and the NHLPA to come to their agreement on the 2021 season. Until then, we will continue to talk Preds here this hour and Preds Insiders every Monday, brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental and sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Welcoming in Chase McCabe from Darren Donovan. Chase, weekdays 10 to 2. ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, Chase.
Great show.
It's a fantastic show with you, Darren, and Willie. So everyone tune in 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And as we said before the break, tune in especially tomorrow in the noon hour, either on 102.5 The Game, the Game National app, or the Nashville Predators Facebook page, and you'll be able to see and hear from GM David Poile and head coach John Hines as part of our Hockey Fights Cancer Day with the Nashville Predators. So an old friend, someone who we haven't seen or spoken to in a long time, Philip Forsberg was appearing on Robbie and Rex Road just a few weeks ago, talking about what it's been like being back in Nashville, training for the upcoming season. And Joe Rex Road asked Phil a question about scoring 40 goals and whether or not he looks at himself as someone who could get to that number. Does he ever think about it? And Philip Forsberg had an interesting response, Chase, that I want us to react to. And here's what Phil said with Robbie and Rex Road here recently.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily put up numbers like that. It's a little hard to, I mean, it was one year, I think it was year I had my career high in goals. I was at 4 goals at Christmas. So 30-something was not looking pretty at that point, obviously. But so I think it just the actual numbers are going to put more stuff in your mind that is actually going to help people. Like you said, I see guys that score 40, and I think, personally, I think I'm not worse than those guys, so I definitely see it as a possibility. But at the same time, I haven't proven that yet. So until that moment, I can't say that, yeah, I'm a 40-goal scorer. That's something that you obviously have to earn. But like I said, I believe in myself, and I believe in the team that we have that can achieve that together.
That was Philip Forsberg with Robbie and Rex Road just a few weeks ago, talking about the potential of him scoring 40 goals once in his career. And look, his career high season that he referenced there in that clip, 33 goals in the 2015-16 season. And like he said, he only had a handful of goals midway through the season and then went on a tear in the second half to get to 33. And since then, he has scored 31, then 26, then 28, then 21. And in the last few years, as he's been below 30 goals, he's also dealt with some either nagging injuries or some serious enough injuries to keep him out from, yep, you know, a 4-week span to an 8-week span somewhere in that neighborhood that has, you know, kind of capped the momentum that he was having pre-injury in a couple of those seasons. So you hear Philip Forsberg say that, Chase, that, you know, it's something that he doesn't really think about all that often, but that he looks at other 40 goal scorers in the league and he doesn't think he's worse
I like
than some of those
that.
40 goal scorers. it's hard to disagree with him at times. But what did you make of what Philip Forsberg had to say there and his quest to one day score 40 goals?
I know, you know, we've gotten to know Philip quite well over the years, and I know what kind of a competitor he is. So I know that that is on his mind, and he hears the noise, and that, well, he should be this and he should be that and all of that. But he also uses it for motivation. So there's a couple things here. One, I did like how he put that, oh, well, I'm not worse than those guys, because he's not. He is very capable of being a 40-goal scorer. But you mentioned the injuries, so he's missed time, and obviously the season was cut short. So playing under 70 games the last 3 years have certainly hurt him from trying to get to that point. I mean, he hasn't even been able to reach 30 because of that. He's come close with 28. The second part, and I think it's the most important part, and it's ignored sometimes, is the Predators haven't always been set up for him to be a 40-goal scorer, just because you have Victor Arvidsson that is going to score a lot of goals. Even though they're on the same line together, I mean, they're both goal scorers. Ryan Johansson has his choice. I mean, it's dealer's choice every time. He can go one way to Philip and one way to Victor, and 9 times out of 10, the puck's going in the back of the net. So you have to factor that in. Plus, you bring in a guy like Matt Duchene that can add in the goal scoring. You know, they tried to have some others, you know, Mikhail Granlund, that was hoped to be one, and he did once John Hines took over. So my point is the puck gets spread around, and you're going to have a lot of the 15 to 20 goal scorers like Craig Smith was. And so that's going to take away. I mean, there's so many goals to go around. Now, with the way that the team is set up moving forward, you hope that Elli Tolvanen is going to add, and he's going to be able to be a goal scorer for you. But you don't have quite as many of those guys as you did before, and maybe that opens it up for that top line, whether it be Philip Forsberg or Victor Arvidsson, to add more. Third thing, he's 26 years old. To me, that's just entering the prime of his career, and he's been in the league for 8 years. Eight years, give or take, with that 5 games that he played when he was 18 years old. I still think that there's another level for Philip Forsberg that we just haven't seen yet. If he can stay healthy, if the Joe Folein can recreate a lot of the magic, and he's streaky at times, he gets on one of these hot streaks and can ride that momentum, then heck yeah, I think he can be a 40-goal scorer. It could be tough this year because of the shortened season. But like I said, if he gets on a hot streak, you never know. So I think it'll happen. I think it'll happen here in the next few years, but I think there's a lot that's gone into him not getting to that point yet.
So you bring up something that I think all of us have said at one point or another with Philip Forsberg, and that is, I think there's another level to him.
Mm-hmm.
Or I know there's another level to him. And while instinctually I agree with that statement surrounding number 9, how much longer do we keep asking the question of, all right, is he going to be a 40-goal scorer? All right, there is another level to him. Just wait. It's coming. How much longer do we say these things or ask those questions before sitting back and saying, you know what? As great of a player as Philip Forsberg is and as talented as he is what he is. And that's fine. He's a 25 to 35 goal scorer in the National Hockey League. Those players have not grown on trees in the Nashville Predators franchise's history. But I do wonder at what point we would come to the realization that he may not be a 40-goal scorer. Is it when he's 28, when he's 29, when he crosses the line of 30, when a lot of people think you're on the downside of your career when you're past 30 years old? Not saying that that would be the case with Philip Forsberg, just saying in general.
Sure.
So I think there's that thought creeping into some Preds fans' mind of, okay, well, we keep seeing great things out of him, but not consistently enough for him to become one of those superstar goal scorers like we think he's talented enough to do.
I think if he doesn't do it in the next 4 to 5 seasons, then he just is what he is. He's a solid, really good player, but he's just not a true 40-goal scorer. But, like I said, 26 years old, to me, that's just entering the prime of your career. He's grown up. We've seen that on and off the ice. I mean, not that he was ever immature, but you grow into the role and to being a pro and all of that. And so now he's done that, and he does a lot of the extra work to hone his skills, and that's going to pay off. And like I said earlier, I think that he's never been, I remember you and I had this conversation. I can't remember if it was Preds Insiders or when we did the Saturday show about, can he be a superstar? Can he be one of the household names in the league? And I still think that he can, because now he's kind of set up to be that, to be the best player on the Nashville Predators from an offensive standpoint. He's just got to reach up there and grab it. He's got to now do the extra to get to that point. And so it goes back to that phrase of, well, I think there's another level. I know there's another level. That's a part of it. He's going to have to have that determination of, I got to be the guy. Victor Arvidsson, he's going to get his. He's going to be helpful. But the way that he plays, you got to wonder how much he can sustain of being able to play at that level, because he's so physical and he's such a little guy and he gets beat up like he does. Philip is going to have to try and take a lot of that and put it on his own shoulders and try and put the puck back in the net. And also, I mentioned earlier that he's streaky, trying to get out of that, just keeping a steady momentum throughout the season of not, having 4 goals and, to the point in December and then just turning it on once the calendar changes. I mean, it's all about consistency throughout the 82 game in a normal year schedule. And that's all a part of Philip getting to that next level.
Well, I think there's a couple things at play here with what you've kind of brought up multiple times here talking about Forsberg. And that is, sometimes there aren't enough goals to go around to everybody to reach their full potential. I can see what you're saying there, but I don't think that really applies to, say, Brad Marchand and David Pastrnak in Boston.
It's fair.
I think there are examples of their being able to have of teams being able to have multiple 30 plus goal scorers, maybe even knocking on the door of 40, like Marchand and Pastrnak here in the last few years. And they've almost gone to the extreme the other way. They were almost too skilled in the last couple seasons as a team and didn't have enough bite, especially at forward. And now they've almost gone the completely other way, where they have a lot of bite, but maybe not enough skill. So teams are going to be able to know that if you stop the Jofa line, this team may not score 2 goals
sure
on a given night if you completely take out the Jofa line. Or it's going to take a lot for this team to score at even strength if you take out the Jofa line. I think that mindset from other teams, where they know that there's not another line that is going to be a huge threat on a night-to-night basis, that the Jofa line is it, they shut down the Jofa line, that affects Philip Forsberg. It could go both ways. It could go in the way of what you're saying of, all right, some goals have been subtracted, you got to get them back somehow, and Philip Forsberg's your best goal scorer, so he's going to naturally score more. So I think that can go both ways. Here's another thing that we have not discussed that I think Hal Gill brought up just a few weeks ago when I had him on this very program talking about this very subject with Philip Forsberg. And that is, John Hines' system is different from Peter Laviolette's. And John Hines' system could easily cater to more offense from the forwards compared to what Peter Laviolette's system did, which was a big reason why we saw Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, Matias Ekholm, PK Subban when he was here be such factors offensively, because they were always dominating the puck possession. They were always carrying the puck through the neutral zone, trying to set up the offensive zone, whereas John Hines' system doesn't do as much of that. So naturally, once the system is in place, Philip Forsberg could be set up to score more or produce more in that kind of system. We just haven't seen it yet. So I'm not 100% sold on just the system change enabling Forsberg to score 40. He's got to stay healthy. He's got to stay consistent. Point blank, that's what's got to happen once we get back to an 82-game schedule.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think there's sometimes, too, where and I've heard him say this, so I don't have a problem saying it, but he gets a little too cute. He's trying too hard to have the spectacular play or something like that, and that gets in the way. And I think that's been a part of his maturity and growing up of knowing when it's okay to do things like that and when it's not. And so that factors into that consistency as well. I have the goals from last year pulled up, and this hasn't popped out to me until now. He led the team with 21. The next three are gone.
Yep.
Bonino, Smith, and Granlund, they're all gone. So, yeah, and it adds pressure. But how many of those, you know, this is going to be the big test for Forsberg, because how many times do you see that when there's a guy that you know, okay, he's either the guy on the team or he's capable of being the guy, when all of a sudden they look around and they don't have much help and all that pressure's on them? They either thrive on it, under it, or they crumble. Philip Forsberg, to me, strikes me as somebody that's going to thrive.
Well, I think a lot of Smashville hopes you're right about that with Philip Forsberg. We will see. In a 56-game season, I would say, what, a 20-goal season out of him? I mean, he scored 21 in 63 games last season while having a pretty big drought in the middle of the year.
Yep.
I would say 20, 25, maybe 25 being the max to be an expectation from Philip Forsberg if he were to play a full 56-game season. And then,
because he did 28 the year before with 64 games, 26 with 67 games. So yeah, I would say that's doable.
I mean, I would probably lean around 20, 20, 22, 23, somewhere in there. A good Philip Forsberg season would yield that many goals in a 56-game year. Agree?
You take it, yeah.
Well, I would take that as long as Victor Arvidsson is doubling that and making it, you know, 45 goals between the two of them. And Ryan Johansson is having a good year.
Then, yeah, I mean, if those two together put up 40 to 45 in a 56-game year, then you'll take it. And then once you get back to 82, then it's like, all right, 27 years old, in your prime, coming off a good season. Now go get it. Go get your 40.
Coming up next, we're going to look beyond this upcoming season, and we're going to look to the expansion draft. How would we approach the expansion draft with the Seattle Kraken coming into the NHL next season in the 2021-22 NHL campaign? We'll get to that coming up next here on Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth alongside Chase McCabe on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here with you. The Commodore Hour coming up at the top of the hour for all things Vanderbilt Commodores, so stay tuned for that. That is the top of the hour right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth here in studio, joined by Chase McCabe of Darren Donick and Chase, weekdays 10 to 2, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can also find some of Chase's work on the Nashville Predators Radio Network when it is in season, and hopefully we are in season for soon. The NHL season soon. We are just less than a month away from the new target date of January 13th. We'll see if that actually comes to fruition for the NHL. Fingers crossed that here in the next week or so, we have some good news on the league front. Now, looking beyond this season, Chase, there's already some chatter about the 2021 NHL expansion draft. And the Seattle Kraken coming into the league is a big reason why the league wants to get back on schedule and start next October of 21, to start the following regular season after this regular season, which they would like to finish this season in July. You got that? Good. So with the expansion draft with the Seattle Kraken, it's going to be the same rules as the Vegas Golden Knights expansion draft, which I know has a lot of hockey fans groaning collectively that the Seattle Kraken could potentially have another fast start in the NHL, just like Vegas did. Although I don't think NHL GMs are going to overthink themselves quite to the level that they did just a few years ago, where Vegas ended up with Jonathan Marchessault. they ended up with William Karlsson. They ended up with some gems, and I don't think GMs are going to overthink it as much next summer.
Either.
But that still doesn't mean that the Seattle Kraken won't end up with a competitive roster. So who will the Predators protect or not protect in that expansion draft that is going to be here before we know it next summer? Now, Chase, Adam Vingan of The Athletic wrote about this recently, just a week ago, laying out a couple of different options. And as a refresher, with the expansion draft, there are two options. You can keep either eight skaters and one goalie, or you can protect seven forwards, three defensemen, and one goalie. And just a few years ago, the Preds went the eight-skater, one-goalie route, which then left James Neal unprotected and had Preds Twitter going crazy. And
they still are, don't worry.
Totally. They whenever James Neal scores a goal, we know about it because of Preds Twitter.
Should have kept him.
Exactly. Not Kelly Yarncroak. So when you look at option one that Adam Vingan has laid out, eight skaters, one goalie. This would be Adam's projected option for eight skaters, one goalie. It would go Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis, Dante Fabro, Roman Josi defensively, followed by Victor Arvidsson, Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson at forward, and then Juuse Saros in goal. That seems to be a very reasonable route for the Nashville Predators to go down in the expansion draft. Now, option number two, seven forwards, three defensemen, one goalie, would be Ellis, Fabro, Josi defensively, Arvidsson, Duchene, Forsberg, Johansson, and then you add in Kalle Yarncroak, Luke Kunin, and Colton Sissons into that mix for the forwards, and then Juuse Saros in goal. So, for you, Chase, which of those two options are you taking as we sit here today on December 14th, 2020, looking ahead to the expansion draft next summer?
I reserve the right to change my mind at least seven times between now and the expansion draft, because that's probably what's going
to
happen.
So what you're saying is that this is subject to change and this is what you would expect to take in the expansion
draft.
This
is what I expect.
This is the list of players that you expect to protect for the expansion draft.
I would go with option one, keeping the eight skaters, one goalie, because then you protect your core four in Ekholm, Ellis, Fabro, Josi, and you have to protect Josi with the no movement clause. Then you keep Jofa plus Duchene and Juuse Saros. That's what I would do. But I do understand the argument for an option two, as Adam put it. He left Matthias Ekholm unprotected because you don't know what his contract is going to look like. He's going to be somebody that David Poile is going to have to address here in the next couple of years when you look at the contract. But Forsberg is another one. I mean, the reason that a lot of this can change is because just of the contracts that you're going to have to deal with in the coming years. With Forsberg, you're going to have Yarncroak being a free agent, and all of that. So I certainly get both sides of it, but I would go with the eight skaters and the one goalie if it's me.
It's hard to go against that. Now, Matthias Ekholm only having 1 year left on his contract going into the expansion draft makes you wonder, okay, would they go with the seven forwards? Because let's face it, four forwards are likely to be protected no matter what. As we sit here today, things could change next calendar year, but Arvidsson, Duchene, Forsberg, and Johansson seem like locks, right?
Yep.
Unless one gets traded or something unexpected happens.
Yep.
I think they really like Luke Kunin. And I would think a young player like that, who would be, you would think, on a team-friendly deal, would be very attractive to an expansion team like Seattle, where Luke Kunin could start on their second or third line. And that is a player that I know the Predators really like. I mean, they traded Nick Bonino and gave up an extra draft pick to get Luke Kunin.
Sure.
On this team. I don't know if they would be willing to part ways with him and dangle him out there that quickly. Maybe wrong. He could come in here and be a total flop and be more of the Ryan Hartman with the Predators than the Ryan Hartman with the Chicago Blackhawks in terms of productivity and effectiveness. But for that reason, and the fact that Ekholm only has 1 year left at that point, you'd hate to lose Ekholm for nothing. It's very tough. You can go either way pretty easily. If you can get Ekholm under contract beyond the 2022 season, then you go 8 skaters, 1 goalie because you don't want to get rid of Ellis, Fabro, or Yossi. Right. I think the other factor in this is, you know, that Dallas playoff series when Jamie Benn, Alexander Radulov, and Tyler Seguin had their absolute way with Roman Yossi and specifically Ryan Ellis. If Ryan Ellis has a down season like he did that year, from an eye test standpoint, I know that was his career high in points, but it certainly didn't feel like it that year. If Ellis takes a step back from the step forward that he took this past season, then I would be tempted to dangle him out there. Nothing against Ellis, but with the salary cap situation that the Preds find themselves in, would you rather have Ekholm long-term or Ellis long-term? And would you want to get Ellis off the books to create more room to re-sign Forsberg and Ekholm moving forward?
Yeah, because, I mean, that's another. You're going to have to re-sign Forsberg. I will make the argument not only for Ellis, but you can make the argument for Johansson or Duchesne with their contracts, depending on what you get out of them this year. That if you were to dangle one of those big contracts out there, there's no guarantee that Seattle's going to take them, but it's certainly a, you know, the odds are, it's probably too much for them. They'll leave them alone. I can protect somebody else. But in the back of your mind, you're thinking, but if they did, I hate to lose that player, but from a financial standpoint, that gives me a lot more breathing room to do the things that I need to go do.
Totally.
It's a gamble. It's a gamble either way.
It is.
But so I hear what you're saying with El, because right now, like if I have to pick, if right now I have to pick between the two, I'm probably going to go with Ekholm.
Yeah.
I think that Ekholm is the most underrated defenseman in the NHL. I'm not just saying that because he's here. I mean, I see it on a daily basis, but he is. He doesn't get enough credit because that's his game. That's how he plays. And everybody that wants to be like, oh, he didn't have a great year. Well, you also have to factor in that he was playing next to a rookie. So he was trying to cover up for a lot of things that a rookie's going to do. Mistakes are going to be made. And so that affected his numbers as well. I think that Matthias Ekholm is a very valuable piece to the Nashville Predators.
I think a lot of this discussion hinges on the performance of those two players, Ekholm and Ellis. If Ekholm, now Ekholm this past season wasn't as good as he has been in recent years. If that trend continues, then maybe you're thinking you're protecting Ellis, but still going with the 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, 1 goalie and letting Ekholm go, or vice versa. If Ellis takes a step back, Ekholm is solid, then maybe you dangle Ellis out there and see if Seattle takes him. And if not, then you would still have Ryan Ellis around. It's an interesting conversation. I would agree with you as we sit here today, without knowing what Luke Cunnan looks like in a Preds uniform and without knowing
see it first.
Yes. I will say eight skaters, one goalie, but this could easily change in a matter of months.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Cunnan could come in here and light it up. He you know, obviously makes you change your mind. There could be a trade. I mean, who knows what this team... Who knows if David Poile is even done tinkering with the roster before they even get started? I mean, they do have cap room that they can play around with. So I think there's a lot of things to consider between now and the expansion draft, and I'm sure there will be a lot of conversations about it, and it's going to change from what we expect.
No doubt about it. Chase McCabe, co-host of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game, weekdays 10 to 2, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase, thank you as always for hanging out.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
For Chase McCabe, I'm Ryan Poor. Thank you so much for listening to Preds Insiders. Coming up next, it is the Commodore Hour right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.